Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan, bringing you the April 14th edition of the New Yorker magazine. Today's main story is Blue Sky's Quest to Build Non-Toxic Social Media by Kyle Chaika. Onward and upward with technology, Blue Sky's Quest to Build Non-Toxic Social Media. X and Facebook are governed by the policies of mercurial billionaires. Blue Sky CEO Jay Graber says she wants to give power back to the user. By Kyle Chaika. Jay Graber, the CEO of the upstart social media platform Blue Sky, arrived in San Francisco the Sunday after Donald Trump's re-election and holed up in a hotel room. She'd spent the previous days road tripping down the West Coast from her home in Seattle, stopping at beaches and redwood groves along the way, and in San Francisco, she'd hoped to remain half in vacation mode. But now Blue Sky was seeing a surge in new users, and it was looking as if she'd need all hands on deck. There was momentum, Graber recalled recently, adding, it was just picking up day by day. Since launching in early 2023, Blue Sky had positioned itself as a refuge from X, the site formerly known as Twitter. For nearly two decades, Twitter has been considered the internet's town square, chaotic and often rancorous, but informative and diversely discursive. Then, after the tech billionaire turned Trump backer Elon Musk acquired the platform in October of 2022, it devolved into a circus of right-wing conspiracy theories. Liberals began fleeing, and Blue Sky in turn accumulated more than 10 million users by the fall of 2024, making it one of the fastest-growing social networks. But the post-election influx proved to be of a different order, turning Blue Sky into what one tech blogger compared to a Macy's at the start of Black Friday sales. Graber put in 16-hour days overseeing Blue Sky's 20-person staff, taking calls with prospective investors, and recruiting new hires, leaving her hotel room only to pick up DoorDash deliveries in the lobby. In Seattle, Blue Sky's chief technology officer set up an automatic failover so that if one of the company's servers crashed, another would take its place. A team of engineers took shifts to ensure that someone was on duty at all hours, battling to keep the overwhelmed servers online like firefighting, as one put it. On November 14th, 2 days after Trump announced the creation of the Musk-led Department of Government Efficiency, Blue Sky staffers stayed late in a virtual situation room to watch the day's sign-up ticker hit a million. In a matter of 2 weeks, Blue Sky's population doubled. Today, it had a user base of more than 30 million. Disaffected X users gravitate to Blue Sky as a throwback to a gentler, saner social media experience. Being on the site feels like a mixture of Twitter in 2012, when it was a haven for internet nerdery, and in 2017, when it was a seedbed of anti-Trump hashtag resistance. The Blue Sky interface reassuringly resembles Twitter's, down to the winged blue logo, a butterfly instead of a bird, and the character limit on posts, 300 rather than early Twitter's 140. The platform is theoretically open to all, but some MAGA trolls have reported that their accounts have been blocked. Discourse is solidly left-leaning, and disagreements tend to be internecine. The most followed accounts belong to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As if to consummate Blue Sky as a successor to the liberal Twitter of yore, Barack Obama recently joined and in his first post celebrated the 15th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. The platform is not yet populated enough to qualify as the internet's new town square. Even after the Musk-induced exodus, X reports that it has more than 500 million active users per month. Threads, Meta's self-fashioned Twitter alternative, has around 300 million. Yet Blue Sky wields outsized influence in the social media landscape because of the innovative infrastructure built on which it's built. All the giant social networks are what's known as centralized platforms. Most aspects of user experience, from content moderation to algorithmic recommendations, are dictated by the corporation that runs the platform. Blue Sky, by contrast, originated as a radical side project within Twitter under its co-founder and former CEO, Jack Dorsey, to create a decentralized social media model. Where X or Facebook runs primarily on proprietary technology, Blue Sky is powered by an open source protocol, a sort of instruction manual and set of data standards that allows anyone to build compatible software on top of it. As a result, users can customize the algorithms and content moderation rules that govern what appears in their feeds. And if they don't like Blue Sky, they can take their followers and their archive of posts and build or join another site running on the same protocol. The power that typically lies with corporations is thus redistributed to the users themselves. With its post-election boom, Blue Sky has become by far the largest decentralized social network, and Graeber, who's citing privacy concerns, gives her age as around 33, the most high-profile female head of a social network in an industry known for eccentrically megamaniacally men. With Trump and Musk in power, Silicon Valley leaders have taken a rightward turn. At Meta, Mark Zuckerberg has cut back on fact-checking, abandoned DEI efforts, and said that the corporate world needs more masculine energy. Amazon's Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, has ordered that the paper's opinion pages publish only pieces that support personal liberties and free markets. Graeber, who defines her politics as anti-authoritarian, sees Blue Sky as a corrective to prevailing social media that subjects users to the whims of billionaires. Elon, if he wanted to, could just delete the whole X timeline. Just do these totally arbitrary things, she said, adding, I think this self-styled tech monarch thing is worth questioning. Do we want to live in that world? The Seattle area, home to Microsoft's and Amazon's headquarters, is perhaps the most significant American tech hub outside the Bay Area. You can't throw a Starbucks venti there without hitting a software engineer. But Graeber told me that she chooses the city in part for its separation from Silicon Valley and for its moody and majestic landscape. Some people said I moved here because I'm a Moss maximalist, and they're not wrong. Graeber and several Seattle-based employees have desks in a co-working space with views of the Puget Sound. One day in January, I met Graeber there. Tall and willowy, with a halo of tight dark curls, she wore a hooded black coat from the Chinese brand JNBY, which gave her a high cheekbone face a slightly witchy aspect. The workspace was bright and sparse with motorized standing desks and scattered beanbag chairs. Graeber's station was in a pod of four cluttered with external monitors, Annie's crackers, and spent coffee cups. Compared with most tech leaders, she has a low-key digital footprint. On her Blue Sky account, one representative post features a photo of her arms cradling a hen captioned, "My favorite chicken." Jay is an adopted moniker. Blue Sky was named before Graeber became involved, but by coincidence, her given name is Lantian, Mandarin for Blue Sky. Graeber likes to say that her mother, an emigre from China, chose it to lend her daughter boundless freedom. Her mom, who worked as an acupuncturist, and her dad, a math teacher and a former lieutenant colonel, met at a Christian university in Oklahoma. They raised Graeber, an only child, in a Baptist community in Tulsa. Growing up, Graeber looked forward to Friday nights after church when she was granted unfettered access to the family's desktop computer. A formative internet experience was a game called Neopets, in which users raise digital creatures and connect with other players in a shared virtual village. As an adolescent, Graeber kept a blog on Zynga, an early social platform, and taught herself rudimentary code so that she could customize her page with music and a zebra theme. At the time, Graeber identified less as a computer kid than as a bookworm, reading stories of scientific and mathematical discovery. One thing that interested me was how a lot of inventions came through ordinary people trying things, she said. It wasn't just the lone genius. She read the children's fantasy series Redwall and every Robin Hood book in the library. She grew to love such feminist sci-fi authors as Margaret Atwood and Ursula K. Le Guin, who, as Graeber put it, excelled at reimagining how society could look. To this day, she remains an avowed fantasy devotee. In one corner of the blue sky office sat a pile of padded training sword. Graeber belongs to a club that recreates medieval sword fighting tactics, and the office had recently staged a tournament. She picked up a mock short sword and extended it expertly in one hand. I grabbed another, plus a small plastic shield, and she led me in an impromptu battle. A lot of men just rely on brute force to get through things, she said. When you learn that, you can still win with better leverage and technique. She raised her sword and mimed slashing it down toward my exposed neck. After high school, Graeber enrolled at the University of Pennsylvania, figuring that its combination of liberal arts, engineering, and business programs would allow her to maximize optionality. She chose an interdisciplinary major called Science, Technology, and Society, and as part of her senior thesis, designed an online time bank through which students could swap labor, taking photos for another person, say, in exchange for cooking lessons. Graeber told me, in some way, it was like a social network. When she graduated, she moved to an all-female cooperative in West Philadelphia and volunteered for local tech policy projects, which led to a job as an organizer at Free Press, a media advocacy nonprofit. But the policy world operated at a high level of abstraction, she said, and she found it unsatisfying. Being able to make change directly has always been really appealing to me. On work trips to San Francisco, meeting with tech activists and hanging out in hackerspaces, she was drawn to the tech industry's nimble immediacy. In 2015, she enrolled in a coding boot camp in San Francisco, then landed a job at a startup that employed blockchain cryptography to track inventory for corporate clients. But she was restless there, too. According to Graeber, her mother had hoped that she would become a doctor and would tell her, contra the name Lanchon, you could have too much freedom. You have to learn how to become more grounded. In San Francisco, Graeber started going by Jay, a blue jay, she reasoned, could navigate both sky and land. A new crypto opportunity soon arose. A friend's brother was running a Bitcoin mining operation in a defunct ammunition factory in rural Washington and needed help from someone with technical prowess and an appetite for grunt work. Graeber moved to a house near the factory and between shifts spent hours studying code on her own. She described this to me as her cocoon period. There were no distractions, no place to go, no parties, no friends. Even in isolation, Graeber displayed a future tech founder's knack for self-invention. She wore earrings made out of salvaged memory sticks and dyed locks of her hair electric blue and purple. She began lifting weights and, for a brief time, tried an all-meat diet. I'm pretty experimental, she said. I'll try anything once. In mid-2016, Graeber went to San Francisco to attend the first annual Decentralized Web Summit, hosted by the open web organization Internet Archive. There she met Zuko Wilcox O'Hearn, who was developing a cryptocurrency called Zcash. Wilcox O'Hearn told me that Graeber stood out for the contrast between her youth and her seriousness, and for her emotional intelligence. He hired her as a junior engineer, and she eventually rose to oversee developer operations. One early Zcash transaction became something of a legend within the blockchain community. In the memo field, the sender had encrypted a romantic message. Though people didn't know it at the time, the note was for Graeber. from a programmer paramour. San Francisco was good for networking and dating, but Graber was spending all her money on rent. She founded her own startup, Happening, a kind of social network for event organizing, but it didn't take off. "I was trying to figure out how to get people to use a social app," she said. "Starting from zero was really hard." Then in December 2019, she saw a tweet thread from Jack Dorsey about a decentralized social media project he was launching, Blue Sky. Graber told me that she felt a degree of so-called nominative determinism pulled toward the project because it shared her name. "If fate doesn't exist, then we must create it," she said. "You can follow things that seem synchronous." On the internet, protocols are a bit like a city's electrical grid, crucial to its functioning, but invisible to most civilians. When you send an email, you are making use of the simple mail transfer protocol, SMTP. When you visit any website, you are using hypertext transfer protocol, hence the letters at the beginning of every address, HTTP. Because of SMTP, your email address can send messages to any other email account. You don't have to be a Gmail user to email a Gmail user. Daniel Holmgren, one of Blue Sky's head engineers, likened the company's protocol, called the Authenticated Transfer, or AT protocol, to an open data lake. Whatever is in the water is public property, and any boat on the lake can dredge it up. Conventional social media, by contrast, is siloed. A Facebook account cannot follow or message a TikTok account. In recent years, Google, Meta, Amazon, and Apple have all been targets of antitrust lawsuits. Protocols are anti-monopolistic by design, allowing stakeholders to build cooperative systems that run side by side. As the founder of Internet Archive, Brewster Kahle, put it in an influential talk in 2015, decentralized technology has the power to lock the web open. What piqued Dorsey's interest, though, was a long 2019 essay by Mike Mashnick, the founder of the blog TechDirt, titled "Protocols, Not Platforms." The piece summed up a crisis that social media companies faced with content moderation. Caught between complaints that they allowed the spread of hatred and disinformation and complaints that they stifled free speech, they managed to please almost no one. The solution, Mashnick argued, was to develop social media protocols which would allow individuals to design filtering tools based on their own tolerances for different types of speech. At the time, Dorsey was facing accusations that Twitter shadow banned content from conservatives. He'd been questioned by Congress about the company's content moderation practices. If Twitter were on a protocol and the work of content moderation were decentralized, then the company's leadership would no longer be the target of blame. Dorsey did not respond to requests for comment. Several decentralized social networks already existed, among them Mastodon, another Twitter-like platform, but none had broken into the mainstream. Mashnick, who today is a Blue Sky board member, told me that Dorsey contacted him out of the blue and said, "I'm convinced by your paper. I think we're going to do it." Dorsey announced that Twitter would fund the development of a decentralized standard for social media, which Twitter would eventually adopt. To kickstart the project, his team created a group chat on Matrix, another open protocol for digital communication, and invited select people who expressed interest in joining. Then Twitter CTO Parag Agarwal kept tabs on the group to see who would emerge as its leader. Graber joined and was struck by the rudderlessness of the conversation. New people would pop in, make a few unsupported suggestions, and then drop out. No broader vision seemed to be coalescing. She began collating papers that other group members mentioned and wrote an overview of existing open source social media protocols. She told me, "The way that you become a leader is you just add value, you just do things." In early 2021, Dorsey and Agarwal started conducting interviews with prospective Blue Sky heads. Jeremy Miller, who created the pioneering open source instant messaging system Jabber, and later became a Blue Sky board member, sat in on the interviews as a consultant. He recalled that Graber easily became his pick. "The Twitter heads had preconceptions of what Blue Sky should be," he told me. "She didn't give in to those and just proposed the things that they wanted to hear." Still, the search dragged on for months. In the meantime, Graber accepted a position at Twitter itself, working on blockchain technology. Then, in the summer of 2021, during onboarding, she got a call from Agrawal, offering her the role of Blue Sky CEO. Put off by the protracted hiring process, Graber said she'd accept only if Blue Sky could exist separately from Twitter. Negotiating independence took another few months, but the decision proved pivotal. That November, after years of pressure from an activist investment firm, Dorsey resigned as CEO and was replaced by Agrawal. Then, in January, Musk began buying up Twitter stock. By that April, he'd become the largest shareholder. Encouraged by a disaffected Dorsey, he offered to buy Twitter outright for $44 billion. Twitter had agreed to compensate Blue Sky for constructing a protocol with $25 million over 5 years. Following a brief period during which Graber paid her first contractor out of her own pocket, Twitter executives made sure that an initial $12 million went through. But Graber knew that with Twitter's leadership in limbo, she now had to think beyond Blue Sky's original goal of hosting Twitter. She put out feelers to other companies, including Reddit, about the idea of using Blue Sky's protocol. Then, in August 2022, noting the dread on Twitter at the possibility of Musk takeover, she made another crucial decision. Blue Sky would build not only a protocol, but a social network to run on it. Doing so would offer a proof of concept, Graber said, but it was also important in case we're on our own and need to lean in on Plan B. That October, Blue Sky debuted a landing page with a sign-up box. Within days, driven by word of mouth on extant social media, it had a wait list of more than 1 million emails. The next week, Musk officially became Twitter's owner. When Masnick heard the news, he texted Graber some friendly advice: work faster. The Blue Sky team reached out to Twitter to ask whether Musk would continue to fund the protocol. Dorsey, who sat on Blue Sky's board, had urged Musk to make Twitter open source, so Graber held out hope that Musk would support the project. But they soon received an email from a random dude with no Twitter email address, stating that their contract would be canceled. In late 2022, the writer Cory Doctorow coined the term enshittification to describe how social media companies make changes that benefit them but gradually, inevitably degrade user experience. In recent years, Facebook and X have buried news by deprioritizing links to articles. Instagram and Pinterest have flooded feeds with surreally inane AI-generated content, making it harder to find posts of interest. Social media users who voice dismay at such changes are accustomed to feeling as if they are petitioning uncaring gods. Blue Sky staff members, by contrast, like to describe users of decentralized technologies as agentic, a jargony way of saying that they get to choose what they see. One January day, I met in San Francisco with Rose Wang, Blue Sky's COO, and Emily Liu, its head of special projects, who spoke about the average social media user in a way that evoked a factory farm chicken resisting going free range. With the advent of platforms such as Blue Sky, users don't have to petition the mods or complain about the algorithm, Liu said. Using a shorthand for moderators, she added, hating the mods is an artifact of when mods had all the power. Wang, a longtime friend of Graber's and the co-founder of a line of snacks made with cricket flour, said, "Success is when users ask us to build tools so they can go and create whatever experience they want." Decentralized social networks can take several forms. The most complex are peer-to-peer systems in which each individual connects her computer directly to others using her own private server. Perhaps the most prominent example is Urbit, a blockchain-linked platform founded by the neo-reactionary programmer Curtis Yarvin, which has only around 16,000 accounts. A more accessible approach employed by platforms such as Mastodon, which has some 10 million registered users, is the federated model, in which some people build servers to host groups of accounts, forming a federation of user hosts. Last year, looking to break into the so-called Fediverse, Meta took its first step into decentralized social media and began integrating some of Thread's functions with the protocol that Mastodon runs. On Blue Sky, any user can host their own account on a private server or join the server of another user host. But the vast majority of users choose a default option that lets Blue Sky servers function as a host. As a result, creating an account on Blue Sky can be as easy as signing up for Facebook or X. In the spring of 2023, Blue Sky rolled out an invite-only beta version of its app. The first batches of invitations went out to just 1,000 people from the waitlist each week, but each new user was given invite codes to recruit others, and the population quickly diversified. Wrestlers formed an enthusiastic niche and soon attracted other sports subcultures. Brazilian Taylor Swift fans established a community. Early adopters came disproportionately from the groups most negatively affected by Musk's right-wing makeover of X: sex workers, trans people, people of color. X users in the media and progressive politics traded invite codes like passengers on a ship hijacked by lunatics, offering spots only on the lifeboat. When I joined Blue Sky in April of 2023, the scene was underpopulated and raw. Content moderation was minimal. An optional What's Hot algorithmic feed collected content that was popular across the platform. The posts that qualified had as few as a dozen likes and were, as one user observed, roughly one-third nudes, one-third technical discussion of federated networks, and one-third pet photos. Posts were dubbed skeets for Sky Tweets, a term that has double meaning as vulgar slang. Without the possibility of going viral or attracting much attention, period, users' only incentive was to entertain their fellow internet addicts. The poet and author Patricia Lockwood, a maestro of tweeting, had departed Twitter after Trump used the platform to incite the January 6th riot. She joined Blue Sky in May of 2023 and began skeeting in her signature absurdist style. In one brief prose poem, she narrated tumbling down a hill. "Haha, yes, it will be the job of Sisyphus, my sexual partner, to roll me up again." Lockwood told me that Blue Sky felt a bit like returning to a second childhood, striving to reclaim a social internet that was fun and freeing. The early enthusiasm allowed Graber to raise $8 million in seed investment that July, providing the team with a runway to keep growing. Then Blue Sky signups slowed, in part because of competition from Threads, which debuted that month. In February 2024, Blue Sky's social platform became open to the public, yet it continued to feel like a digital backwater. I checked in sporadically that spring and summer and found little action. Periodically, I posted messages into the void, such as, "BTW, I'm still on this site." In August, when X was briefly banned in Brazil for refusing to follow local moderation laws, a wave of Brazilians, among the world's most internet-savvy people, migrated to Blue Sky. But the platform may well have remained as niche as Mastodon, which stalled out after experiencing a bump in popularity when Musk acquired Twitter. One feature that helped make Blue Sky a viable X replacement was its starter packs, offering user-curated lists of accounts to follow in certain areas of interest, so that new members didn't have to rebuild their online communities from scratch. Threads soon added the same feature. When a user logs on to X, two tabs appeared at the top of her feed. For You, which shows algorithmically recommended posts, and Following, which shows posts from accounts that you follow. The analogous features on Blue Sky differ in significant ways. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, the New Yorker magazine, read by your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. Where X's following feed is crowded with ads and recommendations, Blue Skies contains only the things that people you follow have posted in reverse chronological order, as on early Twitter, giving Blue Sky users a clearer sense of the conversation happening in real time. A Discover feed, meanwhile, custom selects posts for each user according to an algorithm designed by the company. One of its advantages over X's For You is that you don't have to see Musk himself spouting an endless stream of MAGA propaganda and proudly puerile memes. But the site's biggest departure from X is its My Feeds tab, which allows users to select additional algorithmic feeds designed by fellow users. At the Blue Sky office, Graber opens her laptop, which bore a large sticker of a vine-wreathed sword, and pulled up a test account, then navigates to the menu of feeds. She clicked on one called Science, moderated by a self-vetted crowd of science professionals, then on one called Fungi Friends, which filled the feed with photos of mushrooms. A popular with friends feed shows posts getting engagement from people you follow. Quiet Posters, conversely, brings up messages from accounts you follow that don't post very often. Blue Sky's head of trust and safety, Aaron Roderick's, previously worked at Twitter until Musk dismantled its content moderation team and eventually forced him out. Roderick's told me that Blue Sky performs a foundational layer of moderation, with more than 100 contractors working to remove such things as child sexual abuse material and threats of violence. But more fine-grained filtering decisions are made at the individual level. In settings, users can choose from among hundreds of homespun labeling tools that flag or block certain posts in their feeds. The labels range from the straightforwardly functional, a red check mark for authenticated power users akin to Twitter's old blue checks, to the idiosyncratically satirical, a label that identifies landlords, private school graduates, and associates of Jeffrey Epstein. One of the platform's most prominent feeds, Black Sky, which draws more than 300,000 users a month, offers a tool to identify and block racism and misogynoir. Blue Sky as a company can afford to enable free speech because the platform's smaller, optional communities have the power to police speech however they choose. Black Sky's founder, Rudy Frazier, told me, "If anyone uses a slur anywhere in a username, bio, in a post, we get automatically alerted and take action." He added of moderation decisions, "If you're making everyone happy, you're maybe not serving a community." If there's a trade-off to nurturing insular online communities, it's that Blue Sky as a whole still lacks the kind of cacophonous urgency that defined Twitter in its heyday. The dominant discourse trends to take place in a tone of cosseted aggrievement. On a typical day, a litany of posts might ask why nobody is talking about a given issue, the death toll in Gaza, the threatened defunding of NPR, although people are in fact talking about those very things on the same website. Even when it's politically diverse, social media too easily creates echo chambers. In time, if Blue Sky wants to remain relevant, it will have to evolve beyond its relatively monocultural meow. Graber likes to compare Blue Sky to a hotel. "We're trying to create a good time for people who step into the lobby," she said, although the lobby also contains construction materials left there as a community resource. Users are going off and exploring customer rooms that people built, and maybe there's another hotel out back. If the system proves successful, there will eventually be many hotels operating on the protocol. In the eyes of some of Blue Sky's original supporters, though, the success of its social network has undermined its decentralized vision. Its hotels grew so lively so fast that people didn't venture off to build their own. Andrew D. Goldman, a former Twitter engineer who worked for Blue Sky in its first year, told me that hosting millions of accounts on Blue Sky servers is costly and creates pressure for the platform to monetize its user base. If we're going to have huge housing hosting costs, then we need a toll booth somewhere, he said. Graber has resisted replicating Twitter's advertising-driven model, and Blue Sky's open-source structure obviates the possibility of licensing the platform's content to train AI programs, as companies such as X and Reddit have done. Blue Sky currently has only one revenue stream from hosting accounts on custom domains, but Graber envisions sustaining the business by eventually charging subscription fees and by monetizing its marketplace of custom tools. Users would pay, say, $5 a month for Black Sky, and Blue Sky would take a cut. Still, Goldman said that Blue Sky, even with the bones of a good decentralized system, has ended up with the same incentives that led Jack to make Twitter very commercial. Goldman helped design Blue Sky's protocol, but he and Graber later came to an impasse. He was let go in late 2022. Graber ascribed their parting less to ideological differences than to Goldman's lack of productivity. He was not shipping like an engineer, she said, and was treating this more like a research project. Last May, Dorsey revealed that he'd left his seat on Blue Sky's board. In an interview, he complained that Blue Sky was repeating all the mistakes that Twitter had made, becoming a company with VCs and a board. He recommended Nostr, an obscure, censorship-resistant social protocol, to which he had donated $5 million. Graber told me that Dorsey's departure actually freed up the company somewhat. Some prospective users had grumbled that Blue Sky was still the pet project of a billionaire. Without Dorsey's involvement, the allegation was moot. Even on the decentralized internet, founders are not above competing for the primacy of their tools. Mastodon's founder, Eugene Rocco, told me that last year he and Graber discussed a collaboration that would have allowed their two protocols to interoperate, but each told me that the other seemed more interested in having the rival platform migrate onto their own protocol. Rocco did not see the point in Mastodon using AT protocol, given that Blue Sky already dominates it. There isn't really a lot of benefit to running your own app on it, he said. There would just be no place. If the decentralized social media vision is realized, a single protocol might, like SMTP for email, one day host an entire mainstream social internet, the next generation of Facebooks, Instagrams, and TikToks. In January, Mallory Nodal, the executive director of the nonprofit Social Web Foundation, co-founded an initiative, Free Our Feeds, to foster the construction of more social networks on Blue Sky's protocol. The goal, as Nodal put it to me, was to take them up on their offer to make it a truly decentralized platform. Perhaps there will soon be a proliferation of other social apps operating alongside Blue Sky. In the meantime, there are signs of growth. Flashes, an Instagram-like site that launched in February, has so far been downloaded more than 100,000 times. My favorite project beside Blue Sky is a tiny site called Pinksy, a version of Japanese oikake, a bulletin boards for sharing digital drawings. I can log on to Pinksy using my Blue Sky account information and post what I draw on both platforms simultaneously. In the Blue Sky office, I can pull up Pinksy on Graber's laptop, and she said that she had never seen it before. It is not a digital town square. With perhaps a few hundred active users, it's barely even a digital dive bar. But its existence suggests the possibility of other creative projects on the protocol to come. Graber scrolled through the feed, which showcased both sophisticated anime figures and crude doodles, and her eyes lit up. What excites me is new worlds emerging that I can't imagine, she said. As the sun began to set, we walked from the Blue Sky office to a pub. Graber, who doesn't drink, settled into a dark nook, and ordered a non-alcoholic Guinness. As Blue Sky has become more mainstream, Graber has asserted herself more pointedly as a nemesis of social media's old guard. For an appearance at South by Southwest in March, she wore a custom t-shirt that parodied one of Zuckerberg's own design, where his is emblazoned with the phrase, "Ach zut, ach Neil," a riff on the Latin, either a Caesar or nothing. Hers read, "Mundus sine Cerebus," a world without Caesars. The company started selling the shirt for $40 a piece and made more money in a day than it had in 2 years of selling domains. In Blue Sky's founding documents, taking a lesson from Twitter's history, Graber introduced a slogan, "The company is a future adversary." In other words, they must design their platform today in such a way that even if new leadership eventually jettisons their guiding principles, the thing they've created will remain impossible to abuse. Graber seemed almost to welcome the idea that Blue Sky's legion of 30 million plus users could someday disband. If people migrated elsewhere on the protocol tomorrow, it would only prove the viability of her vision. Every centralized system faces the problem of succession. Because leadership changes and you eventually get someone not smart or not good, she said, then users can vote with their feet because they have their relationship and their data and their identity. Somebody else can come along and say, "Hey, I'm doing it better. Come over here." By Kyle Chakia. Kyle Chakia is a staff writer at The New Yorker. His column, Infinite Scroll, examines the people and platforms shaping the internet. His books include Filter World, How Algorithms Flatten Culture. Letter from Brazil, the Brazilian judge taking on the digital far right. Alexander de Moraes' efforts to fight extremism online have pitted him against Jair Bolsonaro, Elon Musk, and Donald Trump. By John Lee Anderson. If Goebbels were alive and had access to X, he would be doomed, de Moraes said. The Nazis would have conquered the world. The Brazilian Supreme Court, a wide, low, glass-faced building with swooping colonnades, sits near the National Legislature and the Presidential Palace on a vast paved expanse known as the Three Powers Plaza. It is as public a place as you can find in Brasilia. Still, few people seem to notice when, on November 13th, a middle-aged man dressed like the Joker parked near the court, walked a few paces away, and set off an improvised explosive device inside his car, igniting a fireball that rose above the pavement. He made his way to the front of the court, where a sculpture of blindfolded justice sits holding a sword across her lap. The man reached into a backpack, removed a cloth, and threw it at the statue, apparently intending to set it on fire. Then, as security guards approached, he hurled two more bombs at the building and opened his jacket to show that he was wearing a suicide vest. While the guards looked on, he lay down in front of justice and triggered another explosion, which thundered across the plaza, killing the man but leaving the statue unharmed. The bomber was Francisco Wanderley Luiz, a 59-year-old locksmith from a small town in southern Brazil. When a police search team located the apartment where he had been staying, they sent in a remote-controlled robot first, a wise precaution as it turned out. Wanderley had rigged a cabinet with another explosive device, which blew up when the robot approached. In the febrile political atmosphere of Brazil, Wanderley's public suicide inevitably had partisan implications. Investigators found that he had once run unsuccessfully for city council as a member of the party dominated by the right-wing former President Jair Bolsonaro. For several years, Bolsonaro had engaged in a ferocious feud with the Supreme Court, and particularly with Alexandra de Moraes, a pugnacious jurist who is sometimes described as the second most powerful man in Brazil. After Bolsonaro took office in 2019, de Moraes led an ever-expanding series of investigations into him and his family. As Bolsonaro's supporters formed digital militias that flooded the internet with disinformation, claiming that political opponents were pedophiles, spreading blatant lies about their policies, inventing conspiracies, De Moraes fought to force them offline. Granted special powers by the judiciary, he suspended accounts belonging to legislatures, business magnates, and political commentators for posts that he described as harmful to Brazilian democracy. His detractors called him a tyrant and authoritarian, claiming that he was violating their rights. In the fall of 2022, Bolsonaro ran for re-election against Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, a political veteran who has been the mainstay of the Brazilian left for decades. Bolsonaro insisted throughout the campaign, without evidence, that security flaws in voting machines made it possible to steal the election. At one point he warned, "If need be, we will go to war." After Lula took office, a mob of some 4,000 Bolsonaro supporters gathered in the same plaza where Wanderley later blew himself up. In a spasm of rage, they thrashed the Supreme Court, the legislature, and the presidential palace, an uncanny reprise of the assault on the U.S. Capitol 2 years before. Bolsonaro denied any involvement, and his supporters protested that he wasn't even in Brazil at the time. But to investigators, even his absence from Lula's inauguration the week before seemed suspicious. Rather than observing the custom of handing the sash of office to the new president, Bolsonaro had flown to Florida, where he remained for 3 seemingly aimless months, meandering through Orlando malls and taking selfies with Brazilian expats. Eventually, Bolsonaro returned to Brazil, and in June 2023, he was found guilty of abuse of political power and the improper use of communications channels to sow distrust in the electoral system, not jailable offenses, but ones that barred him from office for 8 years. His followers complained that he was the victim of lawfare campaign, and Elon Musk took up the cause. On X, Musk repeatedly attacked De Moraes, referring to him as an evil dictator cosplaying as a judge, and calling for his impeachment. At rallies, Bolsonaro's supporters waved banners with Musk's image and chanted, "Thank you, Elon." After Wanderley carried out his suicide attack, De Moraes described it as yet another manifestation of the virulent rhetoric that had permeated the Brazilian internet. It grew under the guise of a criminal use of freedom of speech to offend, threaten, coerce, he said. The chief of the federal police, André Passos Rodrigues, made it clear that he agreed. Even if the visible action is individual, there is never just one person behind that action, he said. It's always a group, or ideas of a group, or extremism, radicalism. Both suggested that Brazil was engaged in a war over who held the power to determine political reality. On one side were De Moraes and his allies. On the other was an international coalition of right-wing influencers, including Bolsonaro, Musk, and increasingly President Donald Trump. De Moraes rarely speaks to journalists, but he agreed to meet with me to talk about what he calls the new extremist digital populism. The first interview took place 6 weeks before Wanderley's attack in De Moraes' office, an airy space with a wall of windows that looks out toward Lake Perona. Since the spring, he had been clashing with Musk over social media accounts that De Moraes said spread hate speech and malicious propaganda. When De Moraes called for their removal, X refused. When he imposed fines, they went unpaid, and eventually he froze bank accounts belonging to X and Starlink, Musk's satellite network. In August, De Moraes increased the financial penalties and implemented a nationwide ban on X. Musk briefly circumvented the ban through Starlink, which provides internet service to many Brazilians, but he was evidently rattled. His representatives soon assented to De Moraes' orders, including taking down the offending accounts and paying the fines. De Moraes collected $5 million and lifted the ban. Still, he knew that the battle with big tech was not over. In his view, the fight over the internet began a decade and a half ago. The far right noticed during the Arab Spring that social media could mobilize people without intermediaries, he said. At first, algorithms were refined for economic purposes to captivate consumers. Then people realized how easy it was to redirect this toward political power. He cast social media as a defining force of our time. If Goebbels were alive and had access to X, he would be doomed, he said. The Nazis would have conquered the world. De Moraes told me that Brazil offered a significant testing ground for efforts to assert political power through the internet. Brazilians are particularly active online. They are among the world's heaviest users of X and WhatsApp. And unlike in other countries, the judiciary runs elections. The far right wants to seize power, not by saying they oppose democracy, because that wouldn't gain public support, but by claiming that democratic institutions are rigged, De Moraes said. It's a highly structured, highly intelligent populism. Unfortunately, in Brazil and in the U.S., we haven't learned how to fight back. Brazilians often refer to De Moraes as Zanado, or Big Alex, but he is not especially tall. He is, however, conspicuously fit. He runs, lifts weights, and spars with Muay Thai partners several times a week. At 56, he has a shaved head and a face that seems made for cross-examination, with a heavy brow, sharp cheekbones, and a jutting chin. He stares without appearing to care whether he's being rude. In our first meeting, De Moraes recalled that Musk had described him as a cross between Voldemort and a Sith, that is, between the bald Harry Potter villain and a bald Star Wars villain. He mixed the two and said, "That's me," De Moraes told me, and laughed. To be honest, I find it amusing. He did seem offended, however, by Musk's refusal to obey his orders. Like all other companies, this one must comply with Brazilian law. The one who escalated the disobedience was the company under the direct command of its largest shareholder, and at that moment, Musk became personally responsible as well. In conversation, De Moraes often veers between jokes and brusque legal assertions. He grew up in São Paulo in a middle-class family. His father was a businessman and his mother was a professor. As a young man, he attended law school at the University of São Paulo, a training ground for the Brazilian political class, which over the centuries has educated a third of the country's presidents. De Moraes was ambitious, and he rose quickly. By his late 20s, he had become a prosecutor and written a best-selling book on constitutional law. In his 30s and 40s, he held a series of government postings in São Paulo as the city's Secretary of Transportation and as the state Secretary of Justice and eventually its head of public security, essentially the police commissioner. At the time, no one would have accused him of left-wing sympathies. He was a law and order advocate who professed zero tolerance for crime. The most developed countries are those where people respect the law, where people know that if they break the law, there will be consequences, he told me. He commanded a vast force of more than 100,000 officers and sometimes sent in uniformed men and armored vehicles to disperse protests. Then as now, De Moraes tended to shrug off criticism. "To be honest, I've always been controversial," he told me. Yet there are moments in his career that seem questionable even to his supporters. One was his leap to national politics. In 2016, President Dilma Rousseff, a protege of Lula's, was impeached by a group of right-wing legislators who included Bolsonaro. Vice President Michel Temer took over, but his tenure was shadowed by a potential scandal. A blackmailer had hacked his wife's phone and threatened to release compromising photographs of her. The story was made for the tabloids. Temer was 75 years old, and his wife, a former beauty queen, was 32. When Temer explained his predicament, De Moraes quickly assembled a team of investigators to track down the blackmailer and arrest him. As if in gratitude, Temer named him Brazil's Minister of Justice. In office, De Moraes had a performative flair that did little to calm his detractors. Video from the Times shows him striding through a field of illegal marijuana, splashing down the plants with a machete. "When I became Minister of Justice, the entire left called me a coup plotter," he told me, with a shrug. "They hated me. Now the far right hates me. A popular social media meme plays the change in his public image. It shows the footage of him hacking through the field of pot, but in reverse, so that his machete seems to make plants spring up from the ground. De Moraes has been the justice minister for less than a year when a vacancy opened on the Supreme Court and Tamer made him a justice. The court has 11 members, each serving until the age of 75, and they wield extraordinary power. When it comes to the extent of authority of the Supreme Court, we have no clear limits. Felipe Recondo, a Brazilian journalist who has written several books on the court, told me. They argue everything of importance, from taxes to racial issues to abortion. Unlike in the U.S., many consequential cases go directly to the court without needing to pass through appeals. And that's all we have time for today. By John Lee Anderson. John Lee Anderson is a staff writer, began contributing to The New Yorker in 1998. His books include Che Guevara, A Revolutionary Life. We are at the conclusion of this week's The New Yorker magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. Thank you for tuning in this week, and I invite you to join me next week for another new edition of The New Yorker magazine. Have a great week, and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.